Welcome to the Proper Mental Podcast. Normalizing open and honest conversations about mental health by having open and honest conversations about mental health.
So, episode 2, and we've got our first guest. This week we chatted to Brutal Claire Smith. Claire is an ultra-endurance athlete who competes at triathlon from all distances, from standard to Ironman, all the way through to double-decker, which is 20 consecutive Ironman events, which actually adds up to a 48-mile swim, a 2,240-mile bike ride, and then 20 marathons, which is over 500 miles. She'd do that all in one go. And it lasted about a month, so I believe. Last year, she ran from John O'Groats to Land's End, the length of the country, close to 900 miles. And she did that completely unsupported, with just a pushchair, with a tent and a few basic supplies. And that took her 3 weeks, making her way down the country, running anywhere from marathon distance through to 50 miles a day, completely on her own. So Claire's story is awesome, and she had so much cool stuff to talk about. We talked about mental health and how it seems to link with endurance sports. We talked about managing your mental health when you're depleting your body, doing these incredible feats. We talked about what it's like to do a double-decker and then be back at home in your kitchen making a cup of tea. We talk about resilience. We talk about not being scared to fail and loads of other stuff. It was a fantastic chat. Claire was actually the first person we spoke to, and we didn't tell her that. So, Claire, if you're listening, I hope you didn't guess. But it was a fantastic conversation, and Claire was so warm and so open and so honest. We couldn't have asked for a better guest. The conversation's amazing. And Claire's got this really, like, positive energy, and even on Zoom it came through, and it left both of us afterwards feeling like really inspired to want to, you know, go out and achieve stuff and get stuff done. And yeah, she's absolutely lovely. There's loads of stuff I wanted to ask her and we didn't quite get to. There was loads of stuff we talked about that I wasn't expecting to talk about, so that bit was nice. But one thing that I did forget to do that I really wanted to rectify was I forgot to do that podcasty bit at the end where you say to someone, oh, so where can people find out more about you? So I wanted to just give Claire's stuff a bit of a shout out. So if you want to know more about Brutal Claire Smith, you can find her at Brutal Claire all over social media. And her website is www.brutalclaire.co.uk. And if you want to find out more about her events company, because Claire also puts on all these crazy ultra endurance events all over the country and all these funny things up mountains and stuff that lasts for days and loads of really challenging stuff. And if you want to know more about that, check out at Brutal Events or www.brutalevents.co.uk. And I think that is enough waffling for me. Thank you for listening to episode 1. Thank you for giving us all the shout outs and the support. And if you could start to give us a follow and leave us reviews wherever you found this podcast, that would be very much appreciated. So without further ado, let's go for episode 2 of the Proper Mental Podcast with Brutal Claire Smith. Enjoy. Okay, so welcome to another episode of the I Thought I Was Proper Mental podcast. It's Tom here with Chris again. Chris, how are you, mate?
I'm good, man. Yourself?
Yes, very well. Thank you. Very, very well. And we've got a guest today, mate. We are joined with Claire Smith, a.k.a. Brutal Claire. Hiya, Claire.
Hiya.
Thank you very much for joining us. We really, really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
So I first heard about you, Claire, when you got a shout out on Instagram from Matthew Pritchard when you were starting to do your big run last year.
Yes.
And it was your Instagram handle was the first thing that I noticed, the name Brutal Claire. So I thought that would be a great place to start. Were you have you always been brutal, or is that something that came a bit later on?
Yeah, I've not always been brutal. Brutal Claire came from me starting up Brutal Events. I don't like literally walk around thinking that I'm brutal. I really don't. The guy who won my first ever double Ironman actually started calling me Brutal Claire. He was emailing me and stuff, and the name stuck. And it just seemed to kind of, seems to kind of work and sum up the things that I do and the events I put on and the way I think as well. So yeah, Brutal Claire. Just, it sounds a bit dodgy sometimes, people. Some of my emails get kind of like put into spam, blocked and stuff.
I think it's brilliant. It piqued my interest, you know, and you know what you're getting as well. If like you're getting a shout out off Pritchard and you've got the name Brutal in your, you know, I wasn't expecting park runs and, you know, like I wasn't expecting anyone taking it easy. Yeah,
it's always really interesting when you see these Instagram handles, isn't it? Because you've got loads of people who are kind of like Chris runs 26.2 or Bob the Iron Man, and Tom was like, oh, have a look at Brutal Claire. And I was like, ah, oh, Brutal Claire. That's come on, just not really knowing what to anticipate. And I'm looking at my phone. I was like, Jesus Christ. All right, that's Brutal Claire. Yeah, get it.
So I think I've been reading your book, Claire, this week, and the jogger book. It's fantastic. It's really, really good. And so I thought, if we could start there, that would be wicked. So joggle is John O'Groats to Land's End, right? So it's one particular way through the run. Is that as opposed to, is it Le Jog when people go the other way?
Yeah, you can go the other way. And recently I've been sort of editing a bit of the footage that I took. And there's a part of it, like when I'm in the tent late at night and I'm like, I totally understand why people go the other way. It just gets busier and busier and busier as you head down the country to the point where Cornwall is just tiny roads and masses of cars. And so, yeah, if I ever did it again, which I wouldn't, I would do it the other way. Because going, when you're super tired, going to Scotland where it's quiet and beautiful, and it so would be, yeah. So if anyone wants to know which way to go.
Go the other way, yeah. So, and the really interesting thing about how you did it, Claire, is that it was unsupported, right? So you were like, you flew solo completely.
Basically, yeah. I mean, that was the part of me, because I'm not a fast athlete. I'm always first to tell everyone that I'm not speedy. I haven't done any PBs. I've never done anything particularly good in that respect. But what I can do is sort of grizz stuff out and suffer. I can suffer for a lot of time. So I was like, there's no point me trying to, you know, get any speed records here. What can I do that's slightly different that will get people's attention so I can raise some money and stuff like that? So I thought, yeah, why don't I try just... And also I was quite interested in seeing how I would cope. Wild camping I hadn't done yet, and I was very interested in doing that, and also just carrying all my kit and seeing how I would get on with, you know, all the things that would happen to me along the way, which is a fair few things. So yeah
it was quite eventful, right? It's one thing that really like stood out to me when I was reading, and I've read a lot of books about different endurance events and stuff like that. I love this type of reading, but you really focused on the mental side of the journey.
Yes.
And that, like, most people talk about how physically exhausting it is, which of course it is, but I'm like, you know, if you're running 900 miles, of course we know your legs are, right? So the mental side of it really, really, like, that was the fascinating book of the read. That's what kind of made me really feel like I was on the journey with you.
It was the roller coaster, and that was basically what I was trying to get across to people. I would be absolutely fine 1 minute, and the next minute I would be crying my eyes out on the side of the road, and then I'd be okay again. And then someone would turn up and give me some biscuits and I'd be super happy. And I'd be animals and I'd be really happy. And then if something awful would happen, I'd be like really sad again. And that was how it was the whole time.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how do you go about managing that, Claire, like in real time, in the moment, you know? How do you...
I think it's just knowing that it won't kind of stay that way. And that comes with experience. And people can tell you it, but until you know yourself that what you feel right at that moment, that real deep low, it won't last. It will be different. It might be worse, but they don't tell you that. But also, it might get better. It will get better. You just have to stick it out.
Yeah, yeah. And do you feel like that kind of resilience, I suppose, is the word for it? Do you train that? Are you better now at kind of keeping your head together during these things? Yeah.
And the fact that I've done quite a few long distance things now, things that are like up to a month long, I draw from that. And when I'm really low, I think, remember, you did this before. You got to this point before where you were sat on the side of the curb crying and your feet were bleeding and things like that. And you still managed to finish. So yeah, you can definitely just get experience from that sort of stuff and draw from it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Because I think that there really is when you talk about endurance, when we talk about all like these massive physical challenges, there's a real tie with different aspects of mental health. Like it seems to be there's a real it's just a common thread, isn't it, amongst the whole thing. And it's something me and Chris have talked about before is, maybe the physical is a really good way of training the mental, right?
I think so. I mean, for me, the juggle, before I went into it, I was going through a bit of a rough patch. You know, I'd lost someone obviously close to me and other things that personally happened to me that I was going through, and obviously the lockdown and financial worries and things like that. And the way I cope with things now, if I'm struggling, I tend to focus on something really horrible. What can I do to myself that's really awful to kind of almost help me through the sort of mental issues that I'm going through, which just sounds a bit odd, but it does actually work. I don't drink anymore, so that I don't do like normal things like buy shoes online. I kind of buy things and stuff, but I guess the way I cope with my mental lows, if you like, is like, right, what can I do? Focus on a challenge that I can train for and prep for.
Yeah, focus the mind. There's something about humans, isn't there, that we do really well when we have like a goal, when we have a purpose, when we have something to work towards.
Yeah.
And I suppose with endurance, you can kind of like choose your suffering, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
like it kind of puts you in control, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Of your own.
Before I did the double decker in Mexico, again, I was having a real shocker of it. It'd been a very tough year. And I was really struggling. And so I just was desperate to almost get into that zone where I was just physically hurting, almost to focus just on getting to the end rather than all the issues that I was having at home, which I couldn't really escape from. But, going to Mexico and trying to do such a huge event was like, right, yeah, I can focus on that. I can do that. I can't sort all the problems out at home. I can't deal with what's going on in my head right now, but I can focus on, one foot in front of the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. And you mentioned the double decker there. Could you give us the stats on the, the distance covered in those three events?
So it's done in a continuous format. So it was like all of the swim, all of the bike, all of the run, rather than one Ironman a day format. Both awful. The one I did was 48 mile swim, 2,240 mile bike, and then 20 marathons.
Wow. Yeah.
Say that,
As you do. Yeah. So one thing that really fascinates me with triathlon, when you start, like, people do triathlons, it's a great achievement, but people do them. And then there's an Ironman, which is seen as like this massive achievement.
Yeah.
It seems like such a jump to start going from an Ironman to doing like 5, 10, 20.
Yeah, yeah.
So how did you get into triathlon in the first place, Claire? How did it find you?
It was a bit of an accident. I was a runner. I was a long distance runner. I did a couple of marathons and discovered I wasn't terrible at them. I wasn't brilliant either, but I wasn't terrible and I was enjoying the challenge. And I overheard someone at my running club basically talking about how Ironman, his training was killing him and it was really hard. And I, in my head, I was like, oh. And I remember thinking, right, that is what I want to do. And I remember, I thought Ironman was a kind of tough mudder. So in my head, I was like, yeah, I can jump over things and go through fire and things like that. And I was quite excited about it. And then I literally like found out that it was a triathlon, which I swore that I'd never do. So I thought, well, I couldn't swim. I hadn't been on a bike since I was a kid, and running I could do. But yeah, why would anybody want to do a triathlon? It just sounded really rubbish to me.
I mean, that's how I kind of feel about them now, if I'm being honest, having never done one.
I still do, that's the problem. And I'm still like, how has this happened? But yeah, so that's kind of, but once I'd set my heart on it, I was like, oh. And then I found out Ironman wasn't just a regular triathlon, it was a really bloody stupid long one as well. So I was like, yeah. And then, yeah, so then I had to like learn to swim, and get a bike and all that jazz. And it was a really painful journey. And it was a huge achievement. Ironman is a huge achievement.
Oh, Don't think
just because I've done a double decker, the Ironman for me, when I did my first Ironman, it was a massive, massive achievement. And again, I was going through, so I just split up from my husband and I'd moved into a place with my kids on my own. I'd had to get a job, also whilst training for this Ironman. So it was an incredibly horrible time to be then still continue my training. And people were saying to me, you should probably stop or maybe postpone it until you're a bit more mentally stable. But I remember thinking, no, because, you know, I've got nothing else right now. My marriage is over. You know, I'm working in a really crappy job and you know, really hard, but I needed to like continue on with this thing that I had going on. And I did. And it was the best thing I ever did. You know, it started me up.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
I think it kind of relates to that from a multi-day marathon series I did in 2015 after a nervous breakdown. And you can, it's almost like that you're holding on to that to, as part of your battle, aren't you? And you're thinking, I'm going to do this because if I don't, then
it's going to happen.
I'm going to lose. And it really gives you that motivation to drive through, doesn't it? So from an taking the resilience from racing and obviously the Jogo and the double decker, that obviously makes you a very strong person mentally to be able to plow through that, because everything inside of you is saying, this is stupid, your feet are sore, you're dropping weight, your stomach's in a mess, you feel sick, you could be at home in front of the telly with a cup of coffee, enjoying life, this is awful. So does that make you more resilient in, I'm going to say, normal life than outside? I know endurance training is your normal life or racing. Yeah. Does that make you more resilient when it comes to stress and work, when you're facing personal problems or stresses?
Yeah, I mean, I just use the same thing. It's like I've got through these things when, you know, in racing, so I can get through, you know, tough normal times, you know, whether it's my business or, you know, even like I remember years back I had root canal and I'm absolutely terrified and I'm in the dentist chair and I'm like, oh my god, and I'm like shaking, and then I'm like, just remember, you know, you got through that swim at Ironman, which I was absolutely terrified and I almost nearly ran away and got back in my car and drove home. I was planning it in my head, I was like, I can come back later and get my bike, no one would know, and I was like, so that, you know, just to get into that lake took me such mental strength. I had to literally get in like inch by inch, just like blackmailing myself, just do a little bit more. By the time I was up to my waist, I was like, okay, I think I'm doing this now. And it's the same with the root canal. I was like, look, you did that, you can do this. And on the root canal, no comparison really to Ironman, it was something that I was scared of and that I used my Ironman experience to kind of get over and get through. But yeah, I do that all the time.
Yeah. Sorry, Tom.
No, I was just saying that just with anything, whether it's like a particular challenge, whether it's some sort of recovery, whether it's a long distance race, is that whole thing of just putting one foot in front of the other. Right. It's just like, just keep going, isn't it? Baby steps and just keep, eventually you'll get to the end. Or
like breaking stuff down, regardless of whether it is a double decker or whether it's, you know, having to get a new job or moving house or anything that you're going through right now, that's really tough. Just don't try and look at the big picture. You've got to have a goal, obviously, to finish or to do whatever it is that you need to do, but don't focus on that. You know, bring it back down to that day, that minute, that hour, whatever. I'm a big believer in that.
So when you're approaching such a huge event like John Brooks at Land's End, or you're looking at the double decker, how do you break that down? How did you break the double decker down mentally? Because that is humongous. That's a month. I mean, it was 26 days, did you say it took it?
28 days, yeah.
Right, okay. I'll two more days on that. So 4 weeks, how did you break that down?
Literally, again, it was just like day by day. I mean, the swim, I focused on just getting through that swim and not messing about too much, not faffing. I really wanted to get a good time for the swim, so that was like my first goal, just to you know, to do that and not look at the rest of it. And then with the bike, I mean, god, the bike, I had a plan going into it, but it didn't last because, you know, I was so tired from the swim. So my normal plan would be to sleep at 10 and to get up at 2 in the morning, but we were so tired, all of the athletes were so tired from that swim that we ended up sleeping whenever, wherever. And because you go past your tent each lap, which is good but bad sometimes, you know, sometimes you're just having to get off and go to sleep because we were falling asleep on the bike. So it's like, yeah, sometimes it was a case of, when I got back, I had all these notes on my phone, you know, on the note app, and it was just, they were just numbers. And at the time, they made perfect sense to me. When I got back, I was like, what is this? And there was all these little ticks next to some of them, and then there would be scraps, and there would be another load of notes. So obviously, I was trying to break it down. So each break, I'd get on, like, right, another 5 laps, and then the sleep, another 5 laps. So it was just me trying to break stuff down all the time. So yeah, that's all you can do with these things. There's no, you know, there's no way else of doing it.
Yeah.
So was that the approach? Did you almost ad hoc it at the time? Did you just compromise with yourself?
Yeah. I was trying to do like 200 miles a day on the bike. I remember that. And I remember that only lasting a few days and then just having the same with the joggle. The joggle, I started thinking I'll do 2 marathons a day because I'm always overly optimistic about my own abilities, which is kind of good sometimes, but not always, you know. So with the joggle, I almost did 52 on the first day, but after that, I quickly realized that I wasn't going to last that lot physically. It was going to end in tears, basically. And I had to make a quick sort of decision and really sort it out in my own head that, you know, I'm going to have to drop this down to a more realistic goal. And the same with the double decker. It was like where I wanted to finish in 25 days, all of a sudden it started looking like, you know, that's just not going to happen. You know, you have to be kind of go easy on yourself sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's it, isn't it? It's giving yourself that break because it's regardless of the overall or not, it's absolutely incredible what's actually been achieved in that time.
Yeah, I'm really, really hard on myself. So that's like one of my traits that works well and gets stuff done. But at the same time, it can also go against me when I'm mentally, I'll be very, very hard on myself. I'm the hardest person on myself. So sometimes that can work against me because I'll just be beating myself up over stuff that people will be like, but you're doing really well. And I'll be like, oh no, I'm a loser.
Amongst all the juggle and the double decker, is there a significant toughest mental time in all of that where you thought that was going to make or break you on those journeys?
I think for me, when I get cold, that's probably when I get my weakest and I have to watch those times. I will make decisions when I'm very cold, and I'm not just talking about a little bit chilly, but you know, when I'm properly cold and I do feel the cold badly, I will make decisions then that half an hour later I'll be like, shit, why did I do that? And I have to be very careful that, like with the joggle, I went through like a Storm Francis, or I think it was called. I remember just getting very, very cold and thinking, right, okay, this is the point where you need to watch it. And like, you know, I went into a barn and got my rab jacket on. It was like August. But same with Mexico, you know, I'm known for taking bad weather everywhere I go. In Mexico, we obviously had a really stormy event and everyone's like, we can't understand this. And I'm like, I'm here.
I was expecting this.
Well, I mean, New Orleans, they had like the worst weather in 100 years when I was there. And I'm like, sorry. But again, in New Orleans, when I was trying to do a decker, you had terrible weather, but I got very, very cold in the swim. And it's like, I will give up in cold water, and when I'm very, very cold, I have to really watch that because I will give up super quickly. My brain, I guess it's a self-preservation thing. My brain's like, hey, look, you've got mild hypothermia, maybe you should stop. There's a fine line. There's a fine line, you know, that you can push through certain times. I have to be careful what I say here, but you know, when you're cold, you can continue, but I have to really watch that. I get quite weak mentally when I get cold. So yeah.
Irrational thinking slips in, doesn't it? And then you don't make great decisions.
No. And there's times where I've pulled out of swims that I could have completed, and yet because I'm cold, I've sacked it off. And then later I'm like, you idiot.
But it's actually something I was thinking about when I was reading your book, Claire, is that if someone was to want to take better care of their mental health and they were to Google how to do that, there's like a list of things that are fantastic to look after your mental health, and these kind of endurance events are kind of the opposite of that, right? So you're supposed to get loads of sleep and you didn't really get any sleep. You're supposed to like eat really well and that wasn't really possible. Don't take too much on, don't stress, you know, like these sorts of things. When they tell people to get more that's it, you know, they say get more daylight, they didn't really mean, you know, like sleep wild in a field. So yeah, it was just really interesting to me, that kind of like that parallel of you know, you almost lose the tools that you would have in everyday life to sort of keep
it. It's a little bit functional, isn't it? I always think it's like a bit of, people have said endurance events, ultra endurance events, are a little bit self-harmy, and there's definitely a parallel with that, which you have to be aware of. I think as long as you're aware of it, and I'm aware of my personality being very extreme, very addictive, that, you know, where I don't drink anymore, I have to fill that gap with something. And I guess ultra endurance stuff for me is like kind of the healthy version.
Yeah.
Of what I used to do to myself, which, you know, was pretty bad. So, yeah, I am aware that it isn't necessarily the healthiest thing. It is to see how sick I can get whilst continuing.
Yeah. Did you, had you, if you don't mind me asking about the your drinking, Claire, but had you stopped when you started doing triathlons and stuff, or was there any sort of overlap?
I know there was a good overlap.
Really?
Yeah. I did a double Ironman and I was still drinking.
Wow.
I was high functioning. Yeah. I started my business. I was, single mum. I was trying my very best to balance out this addiction that I kind of wanted to keep because I liked it, and this healthy lifestyle that I really loved as well. It doesn't work. I tried really hard for years though to keep it running alongside each other, and it was exhausting, actually. It was an awful time, and it just got to the point where in the end I just hit rock bottom, real rock bottom for me. And then it was like, okay, thank God. I was having really horrendous panic attacks, which was sounds awful, but actually it was the best thing that ever happened to me, because it made me, I couldn't function, I couldn't leave the house. And then I was like, okay, you can't run a business, you can't do all this stuff, because now you can't leave the house. So I then had to have a real, you know, strong word with myself, and was able to finally, after just trying so many times to stop drinking, I finally did it about 8 years ago. And yeah, best thing that's ever happened to me.
Oh, fantastic. That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Did you find that when you stopped drinking and you were doing the triathlons and the running and stuff, did that help having that new focus, like the crossover into
I mean, I'd like to say I got better, but I didn't, which was really annoying, because you think when you stop drinking you become really horrendous. This is awful. I was like, this isn't fair. So yeah, I didn't turn into a super athlete overnight, which is a bit rubbish, but you know.
that was my next question.
I didn't, but obviously mentally, I mean, I did obviously feel like 100% better in myself. I didn't, you know, I didn't have horrible hangovers anymore. My anxiety like dropped overnight. I still get it, but it's not like it was. I could then leave the house. And I was, the difference between being able to get up in the morning and just being like, right, let's go for a run, and feel really smug. It was a huge, I mean, it took about 2 years to really get to a point where, you know, I was confident to say I have, you know, beaten it. And it's always that, it's always something I need to be aware of. Obviously I'm quite, you know, I'm very strict to myself on that, but yeah, it took a good few years of like, breaking the habit. It was just a huge habit for me.
Yeah. And the thing with drink, I've teetotaled myself, Claire, and the thing with drink is more other people's expectation of your drinking. That's what I found when I gave up.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because my mum didn't have any. She was just like, oh, you just buy one of those mini bottles of wine. And I'm like, Mom, you're not getting it. But they didn't see that I had this big problem. They knew that I was struggling. They knew I was a bit of all or nothing person. And they knew I had, problems with saying no around it. But they didn't know how bad it had got, because I hid it so well. And I think, you know, people like me, we can do that. It's not good.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with addiction, isn't it? That's that common thread, is that all or nothing trait. And it does, like, a benefit of that is that it fits really well with endurance events. You know, it's like it's a handy.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's a lot of people that I know, you know, used to have like addiction issues. So yeah, it's brilliant.
One thing as well that I really enjoyed about the book was how it kind of, because you were wild camping, because you were going through this crazy experience, and it like stripped everything away, and you found so much joy in the smallest things. There's like one bit where you like get a punnet of strawberries and you're over the moon with it. And that really stood out to me. And I kind of thought, like, I love the idea of these things that take like all society away from us and all this stuff that we think matters that doesn't really matter. Strip everything down to the bare bones.
And it was like when the sun came out, which wasn't very often, and seeing a really nice dog. Definitely.
Yeah. There's something it's something we miss in life. And I think endurance events, they do, like, or you know, not even endurance, exercise in general, doesn't it can kind of strip things away and just put you in the in the present, which is which is really important.
We're humans, we're not very good at living in the present, are we? So I think so. Endurance events definitely do that.
Very, very much so. Did you find that the pandemic affected, because it was during the summer, wasn't it, that you were running of 2020? Did that make a difference to your planning or any of the...
I was quite lucky because I kind of just fell into that sort of slot where things eased up a little bit. What I found quite annoying is because I was running with that huge buggy, which was great, but it was very long. That, you know, where everyone's got like barriers to kind of get in and out, so you're not all mixing and stuff like that. Trying to get into hotels or into shops with the great big buggy with all these sort of barriers when you're tired. I was like, and just having to put my mask on all the time. And just when you're tired, you get a little bit grumpy sometimes. So yeah, but otherwise, you know, I probably hugged my way down the country, which is terrible really when you think about it. But everybody who I saw would hug me and then go, "Oh, I'm so sorry," and I'm like, "It's fine."
I think we've all spent the last year doing that, haven't we?
Happy, and they gave me so much support, and then they'd be like, "Oh, I'm sorry," and it's like, "It's okay, it's fine." I mean, I actually had like a COVID test because I had blood tests before I went and afterwards, and I was fine, but I did feel a bit bad for all the hugging that I did.
But it made such a difference. That comes across in the book. Like, that saved your bacon, I think, a few times, didn't it? When people would turn up and
And I'm such an introvert that I thought actually people sometimes, especially when you're tired, it's quite difficult to kind of be happy and stuff. And but mostly everyone understood that and they weren't expecting it, but they would meet me along the route, walk with me for a little bit, give me some biscuits or whatever, and then leave me, and I would be just uplifted and energized by their presence. So it was like that surprised me so much, and it was brilliant. I got a lot of support.
That's wicked. And keep taking this back to mental health, but there's something about connection and community that's really important. You know, isolation is tough. It plays such a factor in people's state of mind. And just those little moments, man, those little hugs and those little just a bag of crisps and a clap off a stranger
when you're like getting low and getting depressed, whether it's in life or whether it's in endurance events, it's quite easy to just stop talking and to go quiet and just like, you know, close yourself off. And you've got to make that effort to have that contact with people. And it's hard, but once you've got it and you've had it, you're like, oh, okay, that's what I needed. And I didn't know I needed it, but that's what I needed. I needed to talk to that random bloke in that village, his dog, and now I feel so much happier.
And that's so cool, because he's probably just gone home and just said, oh, I just saw some woman running with a pram. So anyway, what's on the telly, you know? No idea.
Just that little bit of contact, and it's we're not meant to be alone, like, and not have any contact. It doesn't.
Yeah.
I can do it. I mean, the first lockdown, it didn't really affect me, you know. I mean, it's affected me a little bit more this time around, but I think it's just like everyone's just like enough already, and actually as well, it's all just wearing us all down a little bit, isn't it? I think
Very much so. Did you have many, because you run brutal events, or you do like events all over the place, did you have to do some like frantic rescheduling and refunding and that sort of stuff?
Well, we just keep rolling it over, and people have been amazing, actually. They haven't sort of demanded money back and stuff. They're trusting us that we will put the events on as soon as we can, because refunding, it doesn't work out very well financially. It's difficult, but people want us to continue, and we're a small business, so hopefully everyone will just continue to be understanding and we can get back to it at some point.
There seem to be a real community around your events, Claire. That the people you mentioned in the book, and I would be guessing there's only a certain amount of like lunatics who want to do these things, and you tend to see the same ones, right?
Absolutely. There's definitely a hardcore group of people, but there's more every year that come and join us, and it is just, I'm so lucky in that respect that I get to meet all these people, and they're all over the world as well, which is incredible. I go anywhere and I'd find somebody and be like, oh, and the events that I do in America and stuff like that, they're the same people most of the time. And that's really cool.
Do you see a lot of with the double deckers and the deckers and stuff, do you see a lot of the same, like, are you in the pool with the same sort of crowd and stuff?
It's definitely the same, like in Switzerland and Mexico and America. It is a small group of us, But like I said, it's definitely getting bigger. I mean, I'm putting on DECA UK next year, and there'll be a bunch of people that have just been, you know, starting out with the ultra endurance. You know, they've had enough of Ironman. They want to do something a little bit different. They'll start off with a double, and some people will be happy at that, and that's fine. And then a few of the crazies, the ultra crazies, will, you know, start thinking, a DECA, I can, could I do that? And I'm always like, yeah, you can, because that's just, I did it. You know, putting myself down, but I'm super slow. I'm really not any way natural athlete. So, and if I can do it, you know, I'm not saying anyone can do it, but I think so. I think, you know, yeah, anyone can do it.
Yeah.
That's really key, isn't it? In when people approach these things, people will, and then, I think I've just frozen. I'll start that bit again so we can edit it. I think it's really important that we approach these things to remind ourselves that we have all got the same physiological responses in our body, haven't we? We can all run 10K, and we can run 10K, we can build up to a half marathon. If you can do a sprint triathlon, one day you can do a double decker. It's all within reason. And we are all humans that have the same physiological responses to training, like say some are faster, some are slower, but it is all within our arsenal. And it's really important to appreciate that when you're taking on these challenges, because everybody is capable of it, to all of it to some extent, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, I struggle with the one a day format. I'm always telling people that, you know, I mean, I failed it over and over again, but I know every single time I fail, I just make sure I look at what I failed at particularly bad that year, and I work on that. And I now know what I need to do to get through a one-a-day DECA, as it was New Orleans, the awfulest weather in the world. You know, that stopped me that time. And, you know, I had a good chance that year of actually doing it. So I just know that I can do it at some point, as long as the weather gods are kind to me and my training is, you know, on point. So it's a case of looking. Sometimes you'll fail at stuff. And I think that's another thing I'm really... you know, I find it really important to say to people, don't be afraid to fail, because especially when you're doing really, really hard things, you will fail, and you can't be afraid to not give it a go. So many people I know, oh, I would like to do that, but I couldn't, and they're just not prepared to put themselves in that situation where they could fail on Facebook. God, I failed so many times that I'm now just like, eh, you know? And as long as I take something from it each time, then I think, okay, right, well, I'm, you know, progressing.
So what does training look like for a double decker?
Really bad, actually, because what I've done that year was just an absolute shocker. And I hadn't trained properly for it. And I hate to say I blagged up DECA, but I kind of did, because it was just about keeping up. I mean, I'm always fit, but where I was working so hard, I'd done quite a few. We'd done the DECA that year. For me, that's a 3-week event, you know, with the setup either side, very little sleep. And then we went straight into the brutal triathlons, which again was like 3 or 4 days. And then the setup either side, I was really tired. There was a lot of other issues going on, as I mentioned. And so I just hadn't had any structured training. It was just sporadic. And it was almost, I'd just run most of the time just for my mental health. I did a bit on the bike, but not as much as I should have done. So it was very unstructured, it was very sporadic, and it was very bad. My swimming I focused on a bit, so that was all right. So, but it wasn't as I would have liked it to have been. I wish I had trained properly for it, I've got to be honest. But then, you know, would I have gone into it injured, or I don't know.
Yeah
true. Makes it even more impressive.
Thank you. Oh God, I hate when people say, "What's your training?" I'm like, I'm so honest, I can't lie. So yeah,
I suppose it goes to show though the mental aspect of what these things are, because I often think with the long distances, no one's that fit.
No. You know,
everyone's hurting, aren't they? Everyone's in a bad way.
Yeah, and it is how much pain can you endure, and it's an element of luck as well. Because sometimes you get an injury, you can't keep going on. And that's one in the double decker. There was a moment where I got an injury that progressively got worse and worse over the days. And I was quite near the end of it as well. And I was absolutely like devastated, because mentally I was not going to quit. And I knew that. But physically, all of a sudden, I was thinking, actually, I might not be able to finish this. Can you imagine? I've been here for a month.
Oh, amazing.
And I was quite upset about it. It was really playing on my mind. And then one day I just thought, you know what? I had a really random thought. I thought maybe it will get better. And I know it sounds pretty daft, but I just thought maybe it will get better. And that sort of just planted a seed. And by, it was really bad on the Friday, but by the Tuesday, it started showing signs of improvements. And it never disappeared because it was quite a bad injury, but it just eased up enough. And I often wonder whether it was just because mentally I started thinking, this is going to get better. I'm going to be able to finish this. And I changed my mindset around it. And I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. The human body's incredible like that. And, you know, that's a lovely sentiment that you could apply to any aspect of life, really, is, you know, just almost decide that you've got a chance to get better.
Yeah, I'm big on that.
Yeah, because it just, so many things must happen that are completely out of your control when you're doing these things. And, you know, have you got any, like, personal coping mechanisms for stuff like that? You know, how do you get that acceptance that say, right, I've planned for this for ages and now it's raining and it's going to be a lot harder than I thought?
It's just focus on what you can control and everything else you've got to let go of. And that's like in events, in life, in business. I've applied that. Someone said it to me. It was a mountain rescue guy said to me years and years back. I was stressing over an event and the weather looked bad. And I was thinking, oh God, am I going to have to close Snowdon down and let, you know, and ruin the event essentially. And I was really upset because at the time I was a bit of a rookie. And this guy, mountain rescue guy, just said, you can't control it. So don't focus on it. Focus on what you can do. If you have to close the mountain, focus on the bit that you can control. And I've just done that ever since. With everything in my life, like if I can't control something, like with this whole pandemic, I can't control any of it. I can't control my events being cancelled and things that I've trained for and now not happening and all that. I can't control it. So what can I control? So recently I've been doing more, you know, as everyone has been, you know, stuff at home and, you know, projects that we know that we can do, and that, and we've all got through it because of that.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Except, you know, meditation teaches us that, doesn't it? Those sorts of, it's the same sort of thing. You can achieve that same state of acceptance from doing all different sorts of things. And do you find you get to kind of really know yourself when you're doing this? Because you spend so much time in your own head, you know. So, you know, like in therapy, they call it like doing the work, don't they? Well, like when you're, you know, if you've got, you know, 500 miles to run, you know, you get to know Claire, right? You meet in the middle.
Yeah. And it's not always good. I mean, I do listen to audio books and stuff when I've had enough of my own head. You know, music is great, but sometimes you're still in your own head listening to your own thoughts, where audio books can stop that kind of, if you're in a negative sort of headspace, it can change that. I remember in the Double Decker, I listened to Mark Beaumont's books. We weren't allowed earphones, obviously, so I had to, terrible, I had him on my phone stuffed down my sports bra. he was in my sports bra for a bit, but his adventure, because of what he was doing, was so hard. What I was doing was hard too, but it's different. It was like 80 days, you know, around that. I mean, it was just next level to me, and I was like listening to that thinking, you know, he's doing this, I can get through what I'm doing right now, which really helped. But yeah, too much, you've got to be a bit careful that you're not too much in your own head.
Yeah. And is there any come down, Claire? Like, so you finish, you know, you're building up to this event for ages, you spend a month doing a double decker, you're in Mexico, and then next thing you know, like, you're in your kitchen and you're just like Claire again, right?
And it was great, and for the job, I was just desperate for that. I think I said in the book, my head was at home on the sofa and I was still on the phone, like, but I'm at home. I like that when you're doing these incredibly hard things, to come back to the monotony of just feeding the cats and putting the washing on is lovely. I always look forward to that, actually. And I know a lot of people do get the kind of post-race blues. I don't as much, as long as it's gone well, obviously. But I'm, as I said, I've failed so many times that I've kind of, say I've got better at it. Sometimes it's not necessarily the case, because I tried to do the Wanna recently, which is my race, which I keep trying to do, which I keep failing at because I don't train properly for it. It's all the same stuff, but I didn't cope terribly well with that, and it was over Christmas, which I always struggle with a little bit, and I did struggle then. But I guess it was just like I was aware of my mood, and then I was like, right, focus on another challenge that you know you can complete, and then you'll feel better about yourself again. And it's, so I focused on the Everesting challenge, which has no cutoff. And it was just about, you know, mental strength physical as well, it's really hard, but you know, I knew I could get that bit done, and I knew I could do it in, you know, whatever time.
So yeah.
So it kind of helped me. So I did that, and it kind of got me over that, like, the bit of, you know, downtime I had at Christmas. So I do, when I do something hard, I've always got the next thing in my mind.
Focus on.
And I do, I've been told off a bit for not kind of, you know, living in the moment a bit and being happy and, you know, celebrating my achievement. I'm a little bit like, next. But that's how I cope with it, because I don't like to have that downtime where I'm, you know, crying and stuff. It's like, no.
Yeah.
Next thing.
No, that, you know, having that focus is, is really, really good. I just love that message about being okay with failure. I just think that's so cool, because obviously with mental health becoming such a big thing, which is great that everyone's having this conversation, you know, it's great that it's everywhere. But at the same time, there's a lot of talk of resilience, which we all need a certain amount of resilience. But, you know, sometimes you can't always find that. You can't always fight against that all the time, you know, and just being okay with stuff doesn't work out, and having a bad day and just going with it. I just I love that so much. I think that's really important.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Now, I suppose that's a lesson that we can learn from, you know, endurance events and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
How do you pick what you're going to do? What's next? What have you got coming up?
Oh, so many things, so many students. I want to do the Trans Am Triathlon, which is goes across America, point to point race.
Wow.
Mainly because of the bike section. It's like 3,000 miles, Florida to California, and the running section is like bad water, and it's going to be awful. But again, it didn't happen last year, and it's May, and I'm like, is it going to happen this year? It's so, you know, it's unlikely, I would say, but I'm still there going, maybe. So I would really like to do that. But again, I'm trying not to focus. There's things that I'd like to do, but because of the restrictions right now, it's not really, can't really focus on anything other than I'm going to do like another Everesting challenge at some point. More than one.
Okay, so what does that involve? What does the Everesting involve?
It's climbing the height of Everest on a bike.
Right.
Yeah, so you can do it outside, or you can do it on your turbo trainer if you've got a turbo trainer that's power that basically you go up. So that took me, the last time I did it, it took me 20 hours, and it was just horrendous. And so a climb on Zwift that you do, which is out to Zwift, and it takes fast people, they can do it in an hour, so it takes me 2 hours, and you climb up there, and then you get like a 12 minute descent where you're turbo basically descends and you can get off. So you get off.
Okay, get
food and stuff like that. And then, you do that 8.5 times basically.
Wow.
It absolutely broke me. It's so hard. It's so hard. And that was a real, and again, with that, I had to really have a very strong reason to keep me on that turbo when everyone else had gone to bed and it was just me and the cats in the living room and I'm suffering. And, you know, you have to have a very strong, strong reason.
Yeah, because I suppose, you know, your world must just get smaller and smaller into that living room, and you haven't got the sunrise and your strawberries and your hug off a stranger, you know. It's
everyone's gone, and even like Facebook, everyone's gone to bed, and I'm like, I finished at like 2 a.m. but
wow. Oh, that's awesome. And do you train much in between? You train, what does like an average training day look like to you?
So I've actually just got a coach for the first time properly. Randomly. I'm not very good with being told what to do. So I've had coaches in the past and it's just never worked out. I've got a new coach, Mark Whittle, and he understands me. He's done some of my events, he trains people, he trains Matt Pritchard. So he very much understands the minds of ultra endurance. He's training me at the moment, and it's very bike focused. Running. I had to have a bit of a break with my running. My legs are a little bit fed up with me. I can't imagine why that is. But running, because it's my mental health thing. So I would choose running over everything. But my body doesn't want me to run. I did it the other day and I was like, no.
How long did it take your feet to look reasonably normal after the joggle?
They were getting better at the end of the joggle. So they were kind of recovering. But I have like a long-term sort of thing now from all the stuff, but after the double decker, it was the same. It's like a nerve damage, So when I came back from the double decker, it was winter here, which was strange because I'd left in the summer. But when I was going out trying to run again, my feet would go numb just from the cold, but also from the nerve damage. And I had that after the joggle as well, where they were just uncomfortable and weird. And yeah, so it's, you get a lot of nerve damage with this ultra endurance stuff. Like with the cycling, you get it in your hands. Like when you come back, you can't open a packet of crisps. And
wow,
that's just devastating.
Yeah. You're looking forward to those twiglets, Claire, for 500 miles. And...
Yeah.
Oh, that's wicked. Well, that feels like a really good place to wrap it up, Maze. I've really enjoyed chatting to you. Thank you so much for coming on. And yeah, I'm just fascinated. I really enjoyed the book. And I've actually, I'm pretty new to running. Chris is a running coach and he's been helping me get off the ground. And I'm kind of reading your book thinking, oh, maybe I'll see if I can go a little bit further tonight. I found it quite inspiring, but I'm a very, very new one. But thank you very much. Yeah, and I'm really, really, really
thanks, Claire.